Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
I think all of us are familiar with the YMCA and what it's done for young people everywhere to keep fit. But in this episode, we talk to football archaeology founder Timothy P. Brown in a recent tidbit that he wrote that examines the impact that the YMCA had on a game of football. It's all coming up with Tim in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to Tuesday, FootballArchaeology.com Day. Timothy P. Brown, the host of that website, is here to visit once again, as he does every Tuesday. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, thank you, Darren. Looking forward to talking about a song. Well, it's not. It's about a subject that's related to a song that we can't talk about, that we can't sing or play because of copyright restrictions.
But audience, we can share with you that Tim is dressed like an Indian chief and I am dressed like a construction worker as we are about to talk about the subject. No, we're just kidding. But of course, we are talking about the great organization of the YMCA. I think all of us have probably heard of that before or attended or took some swimming classes like myself did. I have one not too far from me. And we have some great tie-in to football history with YMCA history that Tim had in a recent tidbit. So Tim, why don't you take it away and share this great story with us?
Yeah. So, you know, this is one of these where, one of the things that fascinates me about football is the different types of organizations that supported and helped football grow, especially in the early years. And so we tend to think of football as this thing that's run through schools, and then obviously it became professionalized. And so the NFL and AFL and AAFC and, you know, various semi-pro teams, whatever there, you know, but there were, you know, back in the day, there were organizations like the American Legion after World War One. There was all kinds of industrial leagues, some of which were the basis of the NFL, right? So there were different kinds of organizations that influenced football's growth. And one that is vastly underestimated, I think, by many, is the YMCA. And so it really came about in a couple of different ways. One is that, you know, back in, one of the kind of arguments for playing football and justifications for football was this thing called the muscular Christianity movement that came out of, you know, England. And so it was just kind of this belief in the mind and the body and the spirit, and that, you know, football was a way to meld, you know, that all three of them came together in football and provided good training for young men who needed to be hardy, you know, da da da. And so that philosophy matched very well with the YMCA, and which also had, I believe, come out of England. But in any event, the YMCA had a school that is now Springfield College in Massachusetts. It was a school to train people to go out into the world and be YMCA directors. So, I mean, it was kind of like a seminary or however you want to think about it. But, you know, this is in the day when there weren't physical education majors anywhere, you know, and if you wanted to become somebody who would go out and teach, you know, physical fitness, and, you know, you also, you know, bought into some of the, you know, the religious side of it, then the YMCA training school was the place to be. And so, you know, right after he graduated from Yale in 1890, Amos Alonzo Stagg shows up at, you know, he becomes the football coach, and well, basketball wasn't invented yet, but he was a football coach and baseball coach at the YMCA training school. Now, in those days, he also played for them. So he was, you know, a player coach. And, you know, they played typically a bit of a, you know, and, you know, they kept playing, you know, for years. They're still playing today at Springfield. But, you know, they would, like a lot of schools in the Northeast, they'd step up and play, you know, Harvard and Yale here and there. Mostly they played, you know, a smaller college schedule. But they played, they were very competitive, had a lot of good players. And one of the guys on Stagg's teams, the 2 years that he coached there before he went to UChicago, one of the guys was John Naismith, who ends up inventing basketball while at Springfield. And another guy who was a little bit later was William Morgan, who invented volleyball. So, you know, these were, the school was pretty influential in certainly the creation of those two sports. And then, you know, playing football. And so, but, you know, where their impact really came was in World War One, and the YMCA and its role is kind of underappreciated, you know, in World War One as well. But they basically, every camp, every training camp, of any American training camp around the world, and then even those like rest camps and stuff, you know, once they're in Belgium and France and in England, had a YMCA hut. And so these were typically fairly simple structures, but, you know, they had stationery for the guys to write home. They had, you know, a library. They taught classes, especially, you know, there were a lot of, you know, they weren't GIs yet, but they were, you know, the doughboys, a lot of them couldn't speak English. So they teach English classes. But another big emphasis was they supplied, you know, what would be the equivalent now of like $80 million worth of athletic equipment to soldiers. Now, that was basketballs and, you know, tennis rackets and et cetera, but football was a big one. And so, you know, if there was athletic events going on at a, you know, military camp in World War One, it was likely very much, you know, YMCA involvement in it. And so, you know, and these are especially like the interregimental games rather than like the all-star teams for a camp. So, you know, that was an opportunity. You know, this is a time when I think it was less than 5% of Americans went to college. And so they might have played for some rinky-dink little high school team in the little farm town that they grew up in. This became an opportunity for them to really experience, you know, well coached, you know, and you know, more sophisticated football. And so it really was, you know, it really kind of democratized football, you know, the World War One camps. Cause I mean, the vast majority of guys of that age range, you know, served in some form or capacity, or their brother did, or, you know, so it, you know, really spurred interest in football. And, you know, there's many, you know, folks that have made the case that military football in World War One really was a key to spurring the development of the NFL, you know, because it just demonstrated that people would come and attend games played by these former collegians, these college all-stars, that, you know, nobody had said that they would do that before. You know, the NFL prior to the pro leagues before that were mostly like kind of steel town folks and guys who, yeah, some of them went to college and some of them didn't, but it was, you know, more of like a semi-pro feel than what came in the 20s, you know, and then obviously really took off in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
So anyways, it's just, you know, the YMCA is one of those organizations you don't think of as being really influential in the development of football, but it was. And there was, you know, even the guy who led, you know, physical instruction for the Navy anyways, was this guy named Walter Camp, you know? So, I mean, they were connected, right?
Yeah, so, most definitely. Now, there's another interesting story comes out of that with Naismith and a connection to football innovation. And I wrote an article about 3 years ago on it about who was the first to wear a helmet was the question. And Naismith's name is thrown in there because he I wouldn't say that he wore a helmet. He had a, it was described as his, he was getting cauliflower ear from getting knocked around playing the line, you know, in 1891 game against Amherst is what I sort of narrowed down to going through some of the descriptions of it. I think that's a game on October 17th, 1891. His girlfriend at the time helped sew some flannel together and tie it around his ears so he wouldn't get boxed and, you know, be irritated with his ears, and was one of the first head coverings in football that were publicized. That were not like a rag tied around your head or something, you know, but something for protection on your head. So, you know, it's just odd that the inventor of basketball, who gets credited, played at this small college and has had so many great sports sprout out of it and so many great sports stories and connections of football. I think that's just amazing.
I've used that an image of Naismith with that headgear, you know, and I think in one of my books, but you know, definitely in some of the writing. And I know I got that. I got, you know, Naismith was Canadian, so I got that image from their equivalent of the National Archives, whatever. I can't think of the name of it right now, but yeah, it's a great image. He's playing center. He's snapping the ball with his hands. And but he's got the thing wrapped around his head. You never know where a story's going to come from, and the, you know, what I really enjoy is, you know, the links of one thing to another. That's fun.
And I think it's really interesting too, if you maybe think about it in this context. So here you have Amos Alonzo Stagg, I assume graduating from Yale. I think he graduated from there. So he graduates from Yale and then goes to get his master's in a phys ed degree at YMCA school. Just today, we look at him like, hey, what the hell is that? You know, he went to Yale, you know, and going to get a phys ed degree, you know. But
well, you know, he was, I think he was a divinity student at Yale. I'm not positive about
that. Yeah, I think you're right.
But he was definitely, I mean, his whole upbringing, he was a very religious man. And so, yeah, so it made sense, right? And some of his, you know, the guy who became president at UChicago knew him at Yale because he'd been, you know, faculty there, and just, you know, so he knew the character of Stagg, and you know, he's an excellent athlete, best, you know, one of the top baseball pitchers of his time, and so. Yeah, so that's, you know, part of the reason why he said, "Hey, I want you to come on out here."
I'm just putting it in today's context. If my kid graduates from Ivy League after paying that and says, "Hey, I'm going to go to community college to get a phys ed degree what I'm going to do," you're like, "What? What do you mean you're going to do that? You know, let me choke you first." But it's just. But yeah, great stuff. That is very interesting story, and it has so many webs and tentacles coming off it. It's just awesome, and I'm sure you know that connects to a bunch of your other tidbits. And you have these tidbits that come out each and every day about 7 p.m. They're very enjoyable, and you know, talk about some great parts of football history that aren't mainstream, but are very interesting indeed. Maybe if you could share how folks could get their hands on those each and every day too, that would be some enjoyment for them.
Yeah. So, you know, my site is footballarchaeology.com. You just go out there, subscribe, and once you're subscribed, you'll get an email every day with that day's story. And then, you know, kind of read them at your leisure. Alternatively, I'm under the same name, Football Archaeology. I'm on Twitter, Threads, and on the Substack application. So however it works for you, if you want to read it, that's how you get to me.
Well, very good, Tim. We appreciate you preserving that football history each and every day, coming on each week and sharing with us. And we want to talk to you again next week, and we appreciate you. Thank you.
Very good. Look forward to it. Thanks, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.